The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on July 27, 1995 in Penang, Malaysia. The class begins with a reading from the Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 8, Verse 15.
Yoga yuktena chetasa nanya gamina paramang purushang debhyam yati partan uchintayan mamupetya punarjanma dukha loyam asaswatam napnubanti mahatmana sangsiddhin paramangata. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Prabhupada ki. He who meditates on me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his mind constantly engaged in remembering me, undeviated from the path, he, O Partha, is sure to reach me. After attaining me, the great souls who are yogis in devotion never return to this temporary world, which is full of miseries, because they have attained the highest perfection. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Since this temporary material existence, material world, is full of the miseries of birth, old age, disease, and death, naturally, he who achieves the highest perfection and attains the supreme spiritual planet, Krishna Loka, Goloka Vrindavana, does not wish to return. The supreme planet is described in Vedic literature as Abhyakta and Akshara and Parama Goti. In other words, that planet is beyond our material vision, and it is inexplicable, but it is the highest goal, the destination for the Mahatmas, great souls. The Mahatmas receive transcendental messages from the realized devotees, and thus gradually develop devotional service in Krishna consciousness, and become so absorbed in transcendental service that they no longer desire elevation to any of the material planets, nor do they even want to be transferred to any spiritual planet. They only want Krishna and Krishna's association and nothing else. That is the highest perfection of life. This verse specifically mentions the personalist devotees of the Supreme Lord Krishna. These devotees in Krishna consciousness achieve the highest perfection of life. In other words, they are the supreme souls. I repeat again. He who meditates on me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, his mind constantly engaged in remembering me, undeviated from the path, he, O Partha, is sure to reach me. After attaining me, the great souls who are yogis in devotion never return to this temporary world which is full of miseries, because they have achieved, they have attained the highest perfection. Abhyasa yoga yuktena someone who is practicing devotional service by gradual practice. Abhyas means when we practice something day in and day out, going on, becoming accustomed to it, practicing it. By doing so, we become absorbed in Krishna. And by being absorbed in Krishna, we are guaranteed to reach Krishna. There are many personalities mentioned in the Puranas who had become absorbed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, Narayan, and through their absorption, through their ekamun, their single consciousness, they could reach the Lord. There's a story in the Nectar of Devotion about one Brahmana who saw very beautiful worship of Lord Krishna going on in the temple, and he thought it would be very nice if he could do such worship. But he was very poor and he could not afford. And he heard in a class that you can worship Lord Krishna even in the mind, and he will also accept that worship. So then every day after taking his bath and saying his prayers, the Brahmana would sit down and meditate on Krishna. And in his mind, in his meditation, he would do a complete worship of the Lord by meditation. He would imagine there's the deity and he's bringing bathing water from various holy rivers like the Ganga and Jamuna in golden pots and bathing the Lord, that he's dressing the Lord, that he's offering in golden trays, wonderful preparations. He'd cook the offering. He'd do the entire worship in his mind. Let's see. And here the pujari is so fortunate, he can do worship directly. But this Brahmana, he had no facility, so he was doing in the mind. And by doing in the mind, every day for an hour and a half, he'd be deeply meditating on Lord Krishna. So one day, he was cooking sweet rice in his meditation. Paramanna, paisham, pala paisham. Milk sweet rice. And that sweet rice shouldn't be too hot. So after cooking the sweet rice, he wanted to know if it was too hot to offer to the Lord. So in his meditation, he put his finger in the sweet rice. When he put the finger inside the sweet rice, suddenly his finger got burnt. And it was so hot. Oh! He broke his meditation. Then he looked and his physical finger was burnt with a blister. Then he was trying to figure out how was it possible I'm meditating and I put my finger, but how is it my physical finger got burnt? Meanwhile, Lord Narayana, Lord Vishnu in the spiritual planet, he was laughing. And Lakshmi looked and said, "My Lord, what is it? Why you are smiling? Why you are laughing?" Because he had displayed a joke on his devotee who had been meditating. He said, "I'll show you." And while he was telling about what happened with his devotee, he said, "The special spiritual airplane from the spiritual world to pick up his devotee." So the devotee was immediately transferred back to the spiritual world. And there he introduced this Brahmana to Lakshmi Devi. Here is the devotee he has been worshipping. So once a devotee achieves the spiritual world, where there's no birth, no death, no old age, no disease, where one can serve Lord Krishna, Lord Vishnu constantly, then that devotee isn't inclined to come back to this miserable world. So here a devotee was just doing the meditation practice every day. And because he became so absorbed in thinking about Krishna, then Krishna brought him back. You know the story about Ajamil. This is a very famous story. Ajamil was a very good boy, born also in a very aristocratic family, a priest family. He would help his father gathering flowers and things to do the puja. He was married according to Vedic rite, proper way, and had children. But one day when he was going out to gather flowers for the puja, he saw very immoral persons, two men and women, intoxicated, embracing each other, and the body of the woman was partially exposed, and he became very disturbed. And it's a long story how gradually he arranged various tricks to meet that woman, and his wife complained, and then finally he left his own wife and children and family and became like an outcast. He wasn't accepted in the society, and he became a criminal, and he was robbing people and stealing and doing all kinds of smuggling and things, and somehow he was living, and he had many children by that woman. But said that he had the youngest child he called as Narayana. And although he was quite old, he was already up in his 60 when the child was only about 5. He was very attached to that child. He would always be calling the child. So when he'd sit down to eat, he'd call the child. Narayana! Narayana, come here! What did he call? Narayana! Come here, eat with me. Then he'd eat together. Then he was going to go for a walk. He'd call his little son. Narayan! What he called? Narayan! Come on, let's go for a walk. And he's going to go bathe. Who would he call? Narayan! Come, let's go for a bath. In a day, he'd be calling his son 100 times. Every time shouting out, Narayan! Narayan! Narayana! Let's go and take rest. It's getting late. So when it was his time to leave the body and the messengers of death came, because he was a sinful person, that was their calculation. They came to arrest him. They put the ropes around his subtle body to drag him out of the gross body and take him to Yamaloka, where the court is, where all the sinful souls are taken for judgment after every birth. According to the Vedas, we don't have to wait for a final judgment. That happens at the end of the universe. But while the universe is going on, every birth there's a mini judgment. And we are replaced in a new birth. So those who are sinful, they are taken to Yamaraj. And there are about 28 principal hells he has for different kinds of customers. But he has a few, about hundreds and thousands of special hells custom made for special cases. But the 28 main ones are mentioned in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. I saw in Singapore they have the Chinese hells. So in Mayapur we're going to have the Vedic hells also. Amongst not only hells, hell, heaven, everything. We'll have a whole planetarium and show the entire cosmos. Anyway, the Yamadutas, they came and were dragging him out of the body. Immediately the Vishnu Dutas, just at that moment, what did Achimil do but call his son again? Narayana! Immediately the Vishnu Dutas came and cut the ropes. They say, you had no right to take him, he belongs to us. He called the name of the Supreme Lord. While he was dying, he belongs to us. Apart from that, even if somebody chants the holy names of the Lord accidentally, they get purified. He's been chanting the holy names all the time. Every time he calls his son, Narayana, he's calling the name of the Lord. He's getting purified from so many sins. He didn't know that he was doing this, so he wasn't committing any offense. And he was going on chanting, so the Vishnu Dutta said, by chanting so many times, all the sins he had done already cleansed away. Now you can imagine, my dear devotees, if a person accidentally calling on his son, who happened to be given to give the name Narayana, he could have given the name, you know, Flower Puff or something. So many people nowadays, even in the Hindu families, they don't give their name, the child, the name of God. Previously, everyone would be Ram Gopal, Narayana, Shyam, Jadu, Madhu, Madhav, Chand, like so many spiritual names. Kunja Bihari, Bansi Bihari. Nowadays, they're giving names, Flower, Dilip, Deepak, different names that don't have any kind of just Ananda, some name that doesn't have any special spiritual importance. Daisy, Lily, Peanut. So one of the secret ways of getting the blessings is you have to call your son or daughter's name, give a name of Radha or name of Lakshmi. So many, of course, are still called Lechumi. Lechumi means Lakshmi, but it's written like that, Lechumi. Jamuna, and so on. Of course, at the time of initiation, we give our spiritual name to the disciples. So this Achimil, just by accidentally chanting the name of Narayana, he got so many blessings. What if someone is every day chanting Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Siya Dvaita Gadadhar, Sivasadi, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. For some time devotees say, I'm not feeling a taste for chanting. According to the Bhagavatam, if one chants the holy names of the Lord and does not feel spiritual bliss, if the tears are not coming in the eyes, if the hairs aren't standing on end, if one's not feeling spiritual ecstasy while chanting the holy names, then they must have committed a great number of offenses. And the heart must be hard like a steel frame, like a stone. Unfortunately, I think many people have got this steel framing. And we have to, it's Kali Yuga. So we need to break away the steel framing around the heart. The Lord Chaitanya, mercy is so great that Lord Chaitanya's mercy can even melt the stone. When Lord Jagannath in Jagannath Puri is given the bathing ceremony every year before the Ratha Yatra, 15 days before there's a bathing ceremony. And then the Lord is taken, is closed. And that's when they do the Angarag, or the painting of the Lord. And there's a very many special ceremonies that go on. At that time, Lord Chaitanya, he was feeling so much separation. When he couldn't see Lord Jagannath, there was a beautiful temple. There's a beautiful temple called Temple of Alalanatha, which is about 12 kilometers from Jagannath Puri. Lord Chaitanya ran at full speed to this Vishnu temple, ran 12 kilometers. And all the devotees are running after. Gauranga! Gauranga! But they couldn't catch up with him. He ran so fast because he was burning with love for Krishna. When he got to the temple, he went and in front of the deity, just like here, this is all marble. There is a very big pieces of stone, granite. Each stone is about 4 feet by 8 feet. And he went right on that stone and he offered his obeisances to the deity. Namo Brahmanaya Devaya Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha Jagat Hitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namaha. Lord Chaitanya's body was so much filled with love of Krishna that it was so intense that he actually melted the rock. His body melted the stone. That melted stone is still available. It's visible. Now they have taken it out of the temple and put it in a separate temple. It has the entire body print of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. 7 feet tall. He was like this. You can see arms, body, about 1 inch melted into the stone. So even if our heart is hard like a stone, if we chant the holy names of the Lord, Chaitanya, very loudly, it can melt our hardened heart. Gauranga! Shri Krishna Chaitanya! Prabhu Nityananda! Shri Advaita Gadadhar! Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda! So Lord Chaitanya came to give us this process of bhakti. Krishna spoke here, Bhagavad Gita, said, you practice remembering me, you come to me. When you come to me, you like it so much, you'll never want to come back. Nobody ever wants to come back. No unhappy customer. But then why such a wonderful opportunity? Why the whole world is not taking it up? You see, because people, they don't know this. And they don't know how wonderful it is. And just reading it in a book, they may not believe it. But if they hear it from a devotee who's already experiencing how wonderful it is, pramadam, how wonderful this devotion to Lord Krishna is, the bhakti yoga, then people tend to get influenced. So this process of spreading Krishna consciousness is done from one devotee to the another devotee to the another devotee. As they're carrying the mercy in their heart, His Divine Grace to the Abhay Charan Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who also spoke here, isn't it? He spoke here in the Kunjibiari temple, I heard. Is that true? You see, maybe the trustees of the temple would allow a commemorative plaque and picture to be put up next year for the centennial. Maybe Radhakrishna Das or Penang president can consider. They can do some commemoration of Prabhupada being here personally on his centennial year and other places in Malaysia where he went. He was actually here giving a lecture somewhere here, maybe here, I don't know. So he used to carry Vrindavan with him in his heart. And anywhere he would go, he would move people. He would instill in them a faith in Krishna. Because he was carrying Krishna in the heart. And then people he would give Krishna to, they would also carry Krishna in their heart. And this way, the movement spread. That's how His Holiness Bhakti Brajendra Nandan Maharaj, he was reached in London. I was reached in America. And so many devotees, all of you are being reached in different here in Malaysia. So this is a process. The Lord Chaitanya, when he left Bengal, he was worried, what is going to happen? I'm going to be preaching all over India. Who is going to continue the work in Bengal? And being a sannyasi, he couldn't stay in his home state because he was married and it was very complicated. So, at that time he requested Prabhu Nityananda, if he would go back to Bengal with some devotees and continue the preaching. So Lord Nityananda, he accepted the order of Lord Chaitanya, and he went back to start the preaching. And there he established the Namahatta, the house-to-house preaching program, village-to-village. In every village he established the whole village took up the chanting at that time. It became flooded the whole Bengal. The Lord Chaitanya's associate, Nityananda Prabhu, had so much love for Krishna. It said when he was going back to Bengal with the devotees, they were chanting on the way that they would remember Krishna, and one would start to say Krishna would play his flute, and another would say how Krishna would do this pastime, and someone say that, and they would totally forget the road. Now they are walking, and this would be very dangerous if you were driving. But they are walking, and they kind of went off the road, and then they get about 5-10 kilometers off the road, and then they'd say, by the way, where's the road to Bengal? And they would ask, the people would tell, no, you've gone off the road. You have to go back that way. Oh, thank you very much. Then again, they'd be doing kirtan, and they'd be so much into the kirtan. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. They again cross the road and they wouldn't even notice the road. They kind of go on in on the other side. So the road's like this, they're going zigzagging like this. So it took them twice as long to get back to Bengal. Instead of 1 month, it took about 3 months. Because they were so ecstatic. By the time they reached there, and they started a kirtan, the kirtan itself lasted for another 3 months, day and night without stopping. Day and night. And it said the word came and thousands of people would come and they would just be in that chanting and they would get so much energy, they'd go back to the village and they'd get the whole village to chant and more people would come, and it was like a constant, just from one place it was like waves going out, just at his kirtan. So Lord Chaitanya and his associates, they especially came to give out this bhakti, this taste. So the Prabhupada said that, you see, normally, here it says if you just practice thinking about Krishna, chanting his names, serving him, you'll go back to Krishna. But people, they don't have the patience. Before, great intelligent people, they would understand this and they'd do it. It's just like here, the children, they don't have the patience, right? They're running here and there. They don't have so much patience to sit. If I give more games or something, then they'll sit. So like that. But if I say right now, okay, come and take some sweets, you see, all the kids will come, right? Cake. So Prabhupada said, this is what Lord Chaitanya, he came down and he gave us the ecstasy first. He giving us the spiritual paramanandam first. Just like we give the children some sweets in the beginning of the feast and then they become patient, you know, okay. We don't want to go through all the subjis and all that, you know, like little sweet, they're more eager. So now in Kali Yuga, where we don't have so much patience, Lord Chaitanya is giving us the happiness up front. Like now in Malaysia, you have a system, you can buy the automobiles and the two-wheelers, you can buy them by bank loan. Even you don't have the money, but you can just buy a small down payment, you can get the car and pay every month. So here's like that. Lord Chaitanya is giving you an higher purchase, so to speak. I don't know, it's a very crude example, but he's giving you some devotion right away, even you don't have enough money to buy it. Okay, you take it on credit. You just have to pay little by little. So every day if you go on chanting, then your bhakti will grow. Normally people had to do a lot of tapasya, a lot of study, and then at the end they would get bhakti. Bahunam janmanamante ganavang maang prapadyante. But Lord Chaitanya, he's giving it right away. But we have to go on paying for it. If we don't pay for it, then we may lose it. He's giving it to us. Okay, you can take it. But you should, after taking it, you should go on paying the price, little by little, chanting the holy name. So immediately we're already getting the benefit, even we're not fully qualified. Right? Even if someone doesn't have enough money to buy the car, cash. But if he can pay the $500 a month payment, then he can get a $36,000 car over a period of 5-6 years, right? So like that, over a period of our lifetime, if we go on chanting every day, fixed number of rounds per day, follow the guru, then we can, at the end, we can get Krishna. This is the wonderful thing, wonderful mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And no interest. You don't have to pay any interest. Rather, the interest goes down as you go on chanting, you get more and more. It's the opposite. In the material world, you have to, longer time you take, you pay more interest. Here, the longer you chant, you're getting more and more spiritual happiness, more advancement. Simply increases. Anandang bhutivardhanam pratipadang purnamrita swadhanam. The ocean of nectar is increasing, and with every step we take in devotional service and chanting the holy names, we're getting amrita, pratipadam purnamrita swadhanam. Purnamrit means complete, full ecstasy, full bliss. So the pure devotees, they become so attached to Krishna that then they don't want anything else. They simply want Krishna in their life. When they have so much attachment to simply want Krishna, then at the end of life, Krishna will take them back to Him. And they won't have to worry about this material world anymore. But the devotees are so merciful that they don't want to go back alone. They want to give other people the chance also to get out of their misery and go back. You see, that's especially what the duty of the guru is. The guru is there representing Krishna to bring back the fallen souls. Now the guru, he accepts disciples. And the disciples, they have a duty to help the guru. And the guru, he should accept qualified disciples who are ready to follow his instructions. And in this way, he can guide them. But actually, to serve the guru, one has to have a lot of common sense. One has to use one's intelligence and really try to understand what is it that will please the guru. If one just does the things mechanically without really trying to do what pleases the guru, then it becomes counterproductive. It's like the story of the guru and the cardamom seed. You know that story. The guru and the cardamom. You know elaichi, cardamom? You have here in Malaysia, I think, elaichi. What do you call it? In Tamil? Ilakai. Ilakai. Elaichi in Hindi and Sanskrit, and then cardamom in English. So after the guru had finished his meal, he wanted to take a muksuti, a little spice in the mouth for digestion and purifying the taste. So he asked the disciple to get him a cardamom. The disciple said, I don't know what to do with this cardamom. You separate the seed and the skin and you bring it to me. Okay. So then the disciple went, got the elaichi, the cardamom. He took out the skin, took all the seeds out and threw away the seeds. And he gave all the skins to the guru. The guru said, what's this? He said, you asked me to bring the elaichi. I threw out the seed and brought you the fruit. He said, no, elaichi, the seed is the thing. The skin is useless. I want the seed. But Guru, you never told me that you wanted a seed. So usually the seed is useless. So you don't eat the mango seed, you don't eat the apple seed. So how do I know you're going to eat the elaichi seed, the cardamom seed? So I threw it. Look, in the future, whenever I ask for something, you bring the seed. Right. So the next day, after eating, he felt a little bit heavy and he wanted to take something more strong. So he asked to bring one haritaki. I don't know if you know what is haritaki. This is the Ayurveda, there's a trifala. These are three herbs which are used. It's called amlaki, haritaki, and boira. And the three are mixed together and that becomes trifala. And this is very good for balancing the body. So the one fruit is a haritaki, it's like a dried apricot or a date. Almost looks like a date. But it's very bitter. Very bitter, sour. It looks like a crumpled, old, dry date. So there he took off, and it's like a date. He took off the fruit and took out the seed and threw away the fruit. And he brought the seed of the haritaki. And the guru said, what's this? You told me to bring the seed, I brought the seed of the haritaki. No, but haritaki, the seed is useless. You have to eat the fruit. Are Guru Dev, what can I do? So like the Guru was facing so many problems. Because disciple wasn't learning what was the use of each thing. We don't want, disciples, they had to take up what is the mission of the Guru. There are many gurus in ISKCON, and one respects all the gurus, but one might be attracted to a particular guru, and that's quite natural, then they take shelter and take initiation from that guru. And accepting a particular guru also means to accept helping the guru in realizing his mission. But then one should try to be as much aid to the guru as possible. Like the disciple, I kept doing the opposite of what the guru wanted. It was becoming an obstacle. There's another famous story many people know, and many don't know, about two disciples who were given a duty of massaging the foot of a guru. How many know that story? How many don't know that story? Okay, enough don't know it. That you see, now this guru, he didn't really train up his disciples well enough. And one disciple was very lazy and the other one was a little bit crazy. And when the guru came, then he said, "Oh, Guru Dev," and they said, "We'd like to do some service." So then he said, "All right, you can give my massage to my right foot and you can give the massage to my left foot before I take rest. What do we have to do? You put a little oil and give some massage so I can go to sleep." I said, "Okay, Jai Guru Dev Ki! Jai Guru Dev Ki!" So, but you see, each disciple should be really thinking how to please their guru. Actually doing much better than this disciple. He's a worthless guy. He's a crazy. And that guy's a lazy, you know. So, they are massaging. The one day, the one disciple, he got sick or something, had to go off, couldn't come. So the guru said, "All right, today you can do the both feet." So he first massaged his own foot, that he it was a sign. Then he was thinking, that lazy guy, he didn't show up. And therefore, I had to do his job. I had to massage the other foot. I already did my foot. Why I have to do 2 feet? And he's thinking, and I said, that lazy, I'm going to get him. He's so lazy. If I break the foot of the guru, then he'll really have a hard time. So then he broke the foot of the guru. Oh! The guru was screaming, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" "Oh, sorry, Guru Dev." sorry. "Oh, what are you doing?" The next day, the other disciple came back, Mr. Lazy. He said, "What this guy did? He broke the foot of the guru." "Oh," then he had to put all kind of medication and take care. But a few days later, that disciple had to go off somewhere. So Mr. Crazy, he thought, "This guy caused me so much trouble by breaking the foot of the guru. Now's my chance. I'm going to get back on him." And when he was massaging that disciple's assigned foot, he said, "Now I'm going to get him." He broke that foot of the guru. The guru, "Oh, what are you doing? You broke my foot." "Oh, sorry, Guru Dev Ki." This day, the two disciples trying to create problem for each other. Really, who are they creating problem for, Maharaj? For that guru, spoken by a guru. The Srila Prabhupada said that the way we can show him how much we love him is how well we cooperate together. You don't want to get into breaking the foot of the guru just to show the other disciple. So this also, the Puranas and the Itihasas, they give this example as kind of disciples you want to avoid having. In other words, a disciple doesn't really understand what is guru hitam. To be a disciple means we act on behalf of the guru for his interest. By doing that, because guru is a representative of Krishna, then Krishna is pleased. And when we are pleasing Krishna, then Krishna says, "Abhyas Yogina, you come to me." When you come to Krishna, "Naam Nivanti Mahatmana Sangsiring Paramam Gata," then you don't come back here again. You remain with Krishna eternally. But surely those disciples breaking the foot of the guru, they're going to have a hard time getting back to Krishna. And the guru is having a hard time walking. So, it is very important that we all try to become very good servitors of the servitors of Srila Prabhupada, Dasa Nudasa, Krishna Dasa Nudasa, servant of the servant of the Supreme Lord. And in this way, Krishna is very pleased, and when Krishna is pleased, what happens? We become pleased. That happiness we get by causing harm to others is ignorance. The happiness we get by pleasing our senses is in the mode of passion. The happiness we get by pleasing others materially is in the mode of goodness. And the happiness we get by pleasing the Supreme Lord is Sudha Sattva, transcendental goodness. In the Bhakti Yoga process, we are trying to achieve that pure happiness of Sudha Sattva. When we achieve that, then we are fully satisfied. So this is what we hope, that every one of you will become fully satisfied in Krishna consciousness and help others to also achieve that Paramananda. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. I better end here because I see a lot of white papers. Alright. Now we're having the question and answer session. Maharaj, someone has to pick out here the questions. I need help. How does one develop, cultivate one's favorable devotional attitude so that, as Srila Prabhupada said, is essential to advance in one's spiritual life? By Bhakta Anonymous. How to develop a favorable devotional attitude. It said we should accept everything that's favorable for devotional service and give up everything which is unfavorable. If we really understand what is our self-interest, what is helping us, and we understand how serving Krishna and serving His devotee is for our own self-interest, and then we know what is favorable for that, and we accept the favorable things and we avoid the unfavorable, automatically we can start to get lined up. Now what's very important to develop that is by associating with devotees who already have that attitude. Not every devotee is equally developed in this favorable attitude. So to those who are especially fault finders, or those who are in a very bitter mood, they may be advancing, but they're on a slow track. And those who are seeing the good qualities in others and are enthusiastic and cheerful, and they don't hold any grudges on anyone, they're in a more of a fast track. So we look for devotees that we can relate with who are in a better situation than we are, and associate with them. And in this way, then we can progress by that good association. And this leads into the next question, which is, Sadhu Sangha is one of the most, if not the most, important limbs of devotional principles. Isn't it offensive we seek certain devotee association and avoid others? Should we select our association or just associate with any devotee? I think I already answered that before I even read the questions. It's super soul. Lord Chaitanya said that there are three kinds of devotees, those who are chanting Hare Krishna but they are not following their principles. If we can help them, we help them. Otherwise, we don't associate with them very intimately. There are those who are initiated and following very strictly, so we can accept them if you're and a very, we can respect them and offer our respect to them and associate with them. And then those who are very advanced, who are fully fixed in Krishna consciousness, who are on the level of Guru, we can take shelter from them. This is Lord Chaitanya's advice. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he said that we can seek out association with like-minded devotees. Of course, hopefully, a like mind, it should be a good mind. But it's all right. We may be more intimate with some than others. And to go very quickly here, so many questions have come up. Okay, you see, no sensitive issues here, just philosophical. Why was I born? What is the meaning of life? Please advise on how to live a fruitful life, for I will never come back to this material world. I only want to go back to Krishna Loka. Please help me to surrender to Guru, and also help me to surrender and love Krishna forever. Bhakta Anonymous. Everyone was born in this world so that we can start to go closer and closer to Krishna, especially being born a human being. We are given the chance in this human form of life to go back to Krishna. If we miss out, it's a big loss. Human life, out of the 84 lakh species of life, 8,400,000 species, are the species which are given the chance to go back to Godhead. And what is the meaning of life? Well, Krishna has given us the freedom to try to work out our material desires. At the same time, He's given us the opportunity to go back to Him. So all the other species of life, they're working out their karmas, and eventually they come to the human form of life, and then they can go back to Krishna. We've made it! Hrivo! We're human beings. But if we don't engage in Krishna's service, we may blow it and lose out. Therefore, what is advice? The advice is what Lord Krishna said in the Bhagavad Gita. Think of Him, manmanabhavamad bhakto. Become His devotee. Madhyajimang namaskaru. Bow down to Him and worship Him. Always think of Him. Be His devotee. Bow down and worship Him. Engage in His devotional service. Take shelter of His representative, the spiritual master, who will guide you how to serve Krishna. And in this way, in this lifetime, you can reach Krishna. So initially, we chant the holy names of Krishna because this is the easiest way to worship Him and remember Him. By chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Very nice questions. For a person who is new in Krishna consciousness, how does he know for sure that the scriptures were not adulterated when it was translated by Prabhupada? Because one might have the tendency to think that Prabhupada is just another ordinary human being looking for fame and name. Well, it's a good objective question, and people should ask such questions to clear away their doubts. Normally, that's where someone could really study Prabhupada's character. Does he have the nature, someone who's after name and fame? There are so many spiritual movements who are named after the Guru. This Baba and this Swami movement, and so on and so forth. I don't mention any names, because we respect all of them. And we're not saying, but this, I mean, Prabhupada, for his part, and I'm not saying that others did it for that reason, but I'm just saying, Prabhupada, at least, he didn't even use his own name. If he was after his own name and fame, at least he would have put his own name. He didn't even put his name. He called it International Society for Krishna Consciousness, Hare Krishna Movement. All around the world, everyone knows Hare Krishna. But many people don't know who the founder of Hare Krishna is. They don't know the founder is His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Not only was he selfless and not after name and fame, but he was coming in this succession of devotional masters. And he gave up a very comfortable situation in a holy place in India to bring this message to the West. And many people said, we'll follow you if you'll change your principles. But he never changed his principles. He said, I don't want that kind of follower. Let me have less followers. But I want followers who are serious about knowing the science of Krishna. So he never compromised his principles. And what he said is exactly following in the light. You see, whatever Prabhupada said, if you want to go into it, you can see what the previous gurus have said, if there's any contradiction. And great scholars, even in India, none of them, of all the people, so many people have written appreciations of Prabhupada's work, nobody ever accused him of changing the view of Krishna. Now everyone has said he's giving out clearly what is the message that Gita and Bhagavad are presenting. Then the other point is that's why Prabhupada put here the Sanskrit and the word to word. You can see, you can ask any Sanskrit scholar, is it a correct translation? There may be many translations, but nobody is saying that, well, this translation, the original Sanskrit, everything is there. So any objective person, they can understand what is the message given in a Shastra. And then according to the realizations handed down from the previous gurus, he presented it. Now he is a bona fide representative of this disciplic succession. He has the credentials. And someone can go doubting, but the other proof is those who followed him. The medicine is working. When you go to a doctor, how do you know if the doctor is good? If the patient gets cured, then you know it's good. So everyone who took the medicine that Prabhupada gave, they're getting cured. As long as they stick to the process. Scientifically, how does one know about the existence of the soul? Because the existence of the soul is mentioned in the Vedas. Scientists can always go back to the lab and prove that his conclusions was based on his experiments. How does one go back to the Vedas and question it? Because one should have faith in the Vedas. For scientists, the Vedas are just books which can be proven wrong without experiments. Similarly, how does one prove the existence of Krishna? According to them, he is just a fairy tale. Of course, this is a very big question. Could give a whole lecture on this one. Glad we have some intellectuals here. Should have given a shorter class. There's different epistemologies. Epistemologies are, it's a technical word, I don't want to say technical words, but it's a word describing different methods of gathering knowledge. The one form of gathering knowledge is what the modern scientists are using, which is called empirical. It's called deductive and inductive. So this is called deductive. Just like we have here about 180 people, 200 people. Everybody here has one head, two arms, and two legs. So based on the sampling of people here, we can say that all people have one head, two arms, and two legs. But sometimes there might be someone born with one arm or born with three arms, or two heads. Then the whole theory would go out. But deduction means it's based on your experiment. Just like, I got a medicine today, and the medicine said, we don't know how this works, but based on clinical tests, it works. And so far, based on so many thousands of people, we tested it, it hasn't done anybody any harm. Except some people are allergic and get dizzy and something else. It's some itch I have, so itching medicine. So, they don't know, you know, maybe there's one person who's so allergic to this medicine, he may die. But based on their test, only 10 people got sick, and 20 people got allergy, and 10,000, nothing happened. So okay, they said, it's alright. So this is deductive knowledge. By deductive knowledge, you can never know anything for sure. Just like there's a theory that, okay, swans in Germany are white. So thousands of swans are there. And so someone comes to the theory, all swans are white. But then someone will go in Australia, and there they have a unique black swan. So then the whole theory that swans are white is thrown out. One black swan shows up, and so these are just very crude examples. But just like you can come up with an idea like this, what is life? Just like every year, there's new theories about what is the process of creation, what is matter. And originally, scientists thought that physical law would explain everything. Now, I don't know, this seems like a scientific person who wrote this. He didn't put his name. But nowadays, you know, science has gone through a lot of changes. And we had a meeting in 1986 called the Synthesis of Science and Religion. And several Nobel Prize laureates came there. And they personally admitted, we would never have been here sitting with religionists, with swamis and gurus and people 20 years ago. But now, because of the quantum mechanic research in physics, we find that the subatomic particles of quantum mechanics does not act according to normal physical law. Therefore, we want to know from these great wise people whether they have any information that can help us. And we had one Nobel laureate write a critique on the Vedas and the books of Krishna consciousness, and he said there is valuable scientific information to be gotten from these books. So, the other form of knowledge is called inductive. That is what we're receiving from Krishna. Krishna knows what he is, he knows how he created the universe, he knows what the atmas are, and he has handed down this knowledge. By deductive means, it is impossible to know what existed before creation or before this existence. If anything did exist, how can you know it? There'll be no evidence. In the Vedas, Krishna said, only I existed. This material world did not exist. Shiva did not exist. Brahma did not exist. Only I existed. It's in the Rig Veda. So if we want to know what existed before existence of the material world, we can only know from Krishna. Now you can study the Vedas from just that point of view, that this is God and He is giving the explanation what is existence, and see if it works. You will find, I'm a science student, I was a science student, now I'm a Vedic student, and I found that the Vedas are incredibly scientific. And many, many very intelligent people, PhDs, have taken up Krishna consciousness based upon the scientific nature of this, of the Vedas. So there's a lot of practical reasons why this soul exists and why we can understand its existence. But I better go on to other questions. You got a whole stack here. Okay. We are in the Hare Krishna movement, just practicing. Is there anything wrong if we worship the devas or attend any festivals conducted for the devas? You see, Lord Krishna, He has said that He is in the heart of all living entities. He's also in the heart of the devas. And He's the one who fixes people's faith in different devas. Now when a person directly takes shelter of Krishna, then they need to see Krishna in everything, including the devas. If they can see Krishna in the devas, then there's no problem. But if they think that there's Krishna and there's the devas and they get confused about how they're to relate with each other, then it's an obstacle. So that's why the devotees should understand that the devas are all great devotees of the Lord. There is, it's mentioned in the Vedas, in the Vishnu, what's that called? Sahasra, Sirsha, Purusha, what's that mantra called? In the Purusha Sukta, how all the devas are different parts of the body of the Lord. In the Visharupa, it's also mentioned. So the devas are His arms. They're representing. Now if we understand that the devas are the devotees of the Lord, and we offer them respect as devotees, and there's no problem. If we go to the devas and ask the deva to give us blessing to be a better devotee of Krishna, there's no problem. But if you go to the deva and ask the same thing you're asking from Krishna, and Krishna said, well, who do you really taking shelter of, me or him? If you want to take from him, all right, you don't need to take from me. But the devas, they can't give us the ticket back to Krishna. But they can help us in many ways. I was just reading this morning in the Bhagavatam how when Krishna had disappeared from Dwarka, when he went looking for the Shyamataka jewel, all the residents of Dwarka went to Durga. And they prayed to Durga, please bring Krishna back to us. We want Krishna back. So out of love for Krishna, they prayed to the Divine Mother to bring Krishna back. So there are some ways that devotees of Krishna, they may even pray, like the gopis prayed to Katyayani, to Parvati, in her form as Katyayani, to get Krishna as their husband. So such things are all right for devotees. Every time I go to a deva temple, I always pray to the deva for a blessing to be Krishna conscious and to spread the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya, because I know that this is what they all want. If you read in the Puranas how the devas are fighting with the demons, you know how much they want us to spread this Krishna conscious movement. That's really what they want. When a person dies, the soul leaves the body. Here, what? Three on one. So you tick this off and come back again. Well, we'll do. You tick it off. Do a tick. So this we give everybody one. We ask four questions at a shot here. What is the best method of achieving the Supreme Personality of Godhead? What is the best method? Bhakti Yoga is the only method. Krishna said, Name Bhakta Mama Vijanati. Except for my devotee, no one else can know me. If you want to come to me, you have to come by surrendering unto me. Okay, these are quickie, easy ones. What is the best time for meditation? Every time is good. 24 hours a day. But the best time to start your meditation is called Brahma Muhurta, which is an hour and a half before sunrise. But if you can't do it that time, do it any time you can do. But that's the best time according to the Shastra. But we should do it all the time. When I'm thinking of Krishna or chanting his names, I feel like crying or I cry. Why? Well, very good. Could be very good. If you're simply thinking about Krishna in a positive way and you feel tears coming, that means you're getting some mercy from Lord Chaitanya. Of course, sometimes people think of other things and cry. So I'm hoping that you're thinking about Krishna and you're crying, so that's good. If you're feeling attachment for Krishna, that's a very good sign. Things like this are more for individual talking with a guru, because, you know, how can I say what, why somebody is crying? But it could be that it's a devotional crying, and but if one does experience special symptoms in their spiritual life, that's a good reason to get an interview with a guru and clear it up, or with an advanced devotee, and then they can see whether everything is going all right and how to advise you. It's not something to talk about in public. Can I go back to Godhead in this lifetime? Absolutely yes. Especially if you keep crying for Krishna. Wow, this is written in a very light pen. To become a devotee means to have gone through all other purificatory processes such as knowledge of all the Vedas and such. But after becoming a devotee, one still has the same sufferings and problems as a non-devotee. Even after taking up devotional service, one still has the propensity to be envious and cause anxiety to others. There is nothing wrong with the process of devotional life. Why does devotees also come under Maya's attack? So, there are so many processes of purification. When you come to bhakti, it means that this is the supreme process. There's no other process after this. And there's no need of doing any of the lower processes. But we do have to learn how to do bhakti yoga properly. As we do bhakti yoga, we will find many dirts will come in our hearts. These are a cleaning process. You clean the house, dust comes up. We have to be very careful to remove that dirt. We have to learn to be tolerant. We have to learn to be humble. These are part of the devotional process. Now, side by side with chanting and performing the activities, we have to also do cleaning. We have to always be analyzing and seeing wherever we have defects and systematically try to remove that. We've been in this material world since time immemorial, millions and millions of births. Even after a few days, weeks, months, or years of devotional service, it's not unlikely that some of these contaminations are still there in our heart. But if we really absorb ourselves fully in devotional service and we take the shelter of the spiritual master properly, then we can burn out these accumulated contaminations very quickly. So the reason why the process of devotional service still a neophyte may get these different attacks, the contamination is there. As I mentioned in the class, we are getting devotional service very easy from Lord Chaitanya. We're making time payments. If we default in our payment, immediately they kind of foreclose on us. They're going to take away the car. We have to go on making the proper payments. We have to be patient. We are not fully qualified for devotional service. We are getting it on a special dispensation. Like the government, sometimes they give poor people special low-cost housing. They can't afford to get a house, but they let them buy it, giving low credit, no down payment, just to get the people out of the slums. So Lord Chaitanya, just to get us out of this horrible material world, He is giving us a special credit plan. Because we're not fully qualified, we have to work at becoming qualified. We are coming to this process very quickly. But if we stick to it, within a very short period of time, we can get rid of these bad qualities, and we can become properly situated. So we need that patience and determination and conviction. And we need to associate properly with devotees. We need to avoid the different kind of negative activities, and we have to be very open-hearted and straightforward. These are the six things recommended by Rupa Goswami, which will help us to advance in our Krishna consciousness. I can keep going, but you tell me how long I can go. Jogendra Singh, he said, I don't intend to hurt anyone, but I'd like to know why do male Krishna devotees commonly shave off the hair? There are many answers to this question. One Prabhupada said we take 3 baths a day, so we don't have much hair. It doesn't take long to dry. It's also very clean, very cooling. It's a hot climate. My hair already become this, any longer than this, I had to shave again. It gets too hot. But the real point is that the brahmacharis, vanaprastas and sannyasis, they're basically like monks. And they accept a certain lifestyle which is very simple. And part of that is to shave the hair and leave the tuft of hair, which means that we are a devotee. This tuft means we believe in one God. And It's really, it also, and you see someone like, of course now everybody keeps this tuft of hair. It's become a fad. You see a lot of people wearing it. And even now in America, a lot of people are shaving up. So it doesn't always mean you're a devotee, but the devotees who are in this preaching mode, and also brahmanas, some brahmanas, if they want to, grihastha brahmanas, they may also shave. But it's not required. Keeping short hair is recommended. Simple living, high thinking. And by shaving the hair, then immediately, you see, they don't have nothing to comb. Makes life very simple. These monk ashrams, they're not trying to look attractive to women. I mean, they don't have to maintain a romantic relationship with anyone, so hair is not very important. But maybe if someone is in a grihastha ashram or they have to work in society, they can keep hair. It's not like we say everybody has to shave. But for those who are in the monk ashrams or in the tyagi, it's recommended to shave the hair for various reasons. Those are a few. I could go on. Any devotee could tell you this answer, I think. To what I know, both sexes got to cover their heads, but why it's not practiced by males. Actually, in Krishna consciousness, it's not required that everybody has to cover their heads. Only the married women, especially, are supposed to cover their heads. At the time of marriage, there's a ceremony where the head is covered. Even unmarried young girls, as well as men, they don't have to cover the hair. Sometimes in the temples, all ladies, out of their voluntarily, they cover their hair, although it's not strictly required by the shastra. It's kind of out of respect for the ashram. He said, please don't take him wrong because this is his first visit to this temple. We want to welcome Mr. Singh to the temple and thank him for his questions, and we appreciate them, and there's absolutely no problem. Thank you very much for taking the courage to answer these questions. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna Maharaj. Our devotees allowed to hear ISKCON songs sung by non-devotees. Example in cassettes and CDs. In our ashrams, we prefer to have Prabhupada or the devotees chanting. Of course, these are different musicians who have offered their time as a devotional offering to sing this song. So in one sense, there's nothing wrong. And people will surely benefit something by hearing them. But usually for the initiated devotees, would rather hear some singing by someone who is more spiritually developed. These are, especially these songs were sung for attracting the new people who are more attracted by the music aspect than the spiritual aspect. So in our public programs we use these, but more for personal purification, it's recommended to hear Prabhupada or some other more pure devotee chanting. Well, nothing wrong, but that's the guideline. Is it compulsory for a person to go through the four varnashrams? In Kali Yuga, for different... Well, this is really funny, the four varnashrams. The four ashrams... Well, we don't... See. One doesn't... I'm assuming he's meaning that this question is addressing the ashramas, because you don't usually go through the varnas. So the ashramas, it depends also. So for some people, just to go through marriage is the only ashram they have to go through. For spiritual life, if someone is joined, say someone joins the movement as a grihastha, we don't say you have to go back to brahmachari. But later on, the grihastha, it's good if they can take vanaprast, husband and wife together. It's not essential that people have to take sannyas. If they're initiated,
and a wife and a husband, if they can prepare themselves for it, it's all voluntary, really. One doesn't have to go through all the different ashrams. But, this is something one has to consult with one's own guru, what is best for each individual, to know which ashrams one should go through. Some brahmacharis go straight to sannyas, and some brahmacharis go through grihast and vanaprast. So there's all different scenarios. How to know Krishna is pleased with our service? If the guru is pleased, then you know Krishna is pleased. And if you are pleased by serving Krishna, that's another sign.